Hi, I am Ting Ng, and this is the Parents in Tech Podcast. Welcome to Season 1, where we interview mums who are technology company leaders based in Southeast Asia. We want to hear stories, hopes, challenges, and tips from mums who are raising kids while pursuing their career aspirations. In this episode, we speak to Rama, Executive Vice President of MasterCard Asia Pacific. Rama has over 3 decades of payments and fintech experience and is at the forefront of creating new products for the future, including crypto-funded cards. Recently, she was recognized as Innovator of the Year at the Women in IT Summit and Awards Series. Rama has a daughter who is currently studying economics in London. Hi Rama, welcome to the Parents in Tech Show. To begin with, can you tell us a bit more about your family?
First of all, Jinan, thanks for reaching out and thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure. And it's a very refreshing idea that you have hit upon to call parents in technology to talk about. So absolutely delighted to be here.
Thank you.
And about me and my family, we are a small family now in Singapore for the last 18 years. And both me and my husband come from the financial services background, and I branched off to technology because I discovered that was my first love. And we have a bigger love than work in our life, which is my daughter. I have one, and she decided she likes finance a bit more than technology. So she's off in the university studying right now. And that's really us, although I do come from a largish family on my side.
That's perfect. Thanks, Rama. So maybe I'm really curious to know, how do you explain what you do at work to your daughter?
Oh, for a number of years, she couldn't care less what I did. It was, and this is true, because it was much more important to her in the first few years of growing up. She thought all mothers go to work. That was because that was what she saw. And then she realized not all mothers go to work. So by the time she probably came into her double-digit age, you know, she used to be really petulant about, you know, why I needed to go to work, whereas all the other mothers stay at home and take care of the children, right? Mm-hmm. And then by the time she got into her teens, and really treasured her space, she was delighted that I was going to work. In all these years, it mattered very little what I did. Then suddenly, I think, you know, by the time she came to high school, which is when children start getting a wee bit more serious about life and, you know, what do you want to do? Everybody keeps asking them, what do you want to do? And then she was like, what do you do really? And so when I explained to her that I work in payments technology and all of that, she said, what is that? Because for her, it was about her buying her things and me paying for it. That's really what it was, right? So I think that was really the first time. And over the last, I think, 3 years, perhaps, we've had a ton of conversations whenever the opportunity presents itself, where I try and explain, how do you think about technology? Why is technology important in payments? What is the relevance? What is the future of technology in payments? And things like that. When Fancy takes her, or when she has a conversation with her peers and she feels like she needs to know a little more and flash a bit, you know, the power. So she comes and gets herself a wee bit more informed. So it's become interesting now. Now I can actually talk to her. We talk about crypto and whether crypto is the future or it is not the future of finance and so on and so forth.
Wow. Okay. There's so much to unpack there, but maybe let me go back to the start when your daughter was thinking, hey, mom, why are you going to work? How did that make you feel during that first phase?
Oh, very guilty. Extremely guilty. So I did, Chinen, I also experimented with not working. I did take a career break, right? And what I realized in that break was, it's, you know, guilt is not every day, but when you give up something, the sense of what you could be doing could consume you, right? So I actually went back to work. And I'm glad I took a break because I realized that that was not me. And when I went back to work, there was lesser guilt, but there was also always the pressure of trying to manage it such that, you know, you never let one part of your life overtake the other, right? So that's probably how I thought about it.
Thanks for sharing that. That's so real, the challenge, right? Because of that guilt. And sometimes it's also hard for us as parents or really as humans, right? Not to compare. I think there's a sense that, oh, are we missing out? Are we not giving our children the best? So maybe when you were on the career break, could you share, right? What made you realize that, hey, this is not for me. I want to get back into action, right? I'm sure that was also not an easy decision. If you could share more on that.
So when I took a break, so two things happened. One is, of course, I had a small child. But the other thing also was I had just come into Singapore having signed off on a fairly robust, rising, sharply rising career, if I may say so, as a banker. And when I came into Singapore post SARS, much like you can imagine post COVID, how many jobs there are really, this is much better than those days. There wasn't any, right? So there were two reasons for taking a break. Because I didn't know how to get back to work. And two, I thought it was justified because I had a small child. Now, the thing is, Singapore is a very small place, right? And it attracts a lot of people who come in from various places. And when you kind of don't have a home base to operate, the immediate thing that most people who come in actually begin to do is to try and do some desperate networking, right? Because you're trying to build your connections. And I probably went through that path. And as I did it, I realized it was so not who I was. It was not, you know, I liked picking up, you know, work at 8 a.m. and working and thinking and solving problems and, you know, doing all of that. And what was I doing here? Trying to overmanage a social calendar, which was not even like, you know, didn't feel like, and it's not a judgment. For me, it felt like that was not me. So that is what really convinced me that I will have to go back to full-time work. Yes, it will be difficult, but I was not going to quit unless I was absolutely, I'm not in any position to avoid that, right? So I think those 2 years fixed me, you know, for life.
Wow, thanks for sharing that, Rama. And even as you went back, right, I'm sure there was resistance, reluctance from your daughter. But what were some of the things that you changed or even decisions you made that helped you to readjust going back so that, like you said, right, the either part doesn't take over your entire life?
Well, I made some very tough calls, Jeanette. Like I said, when I took a break, I was probably, you know, at a reasonably mid-high point in my career, right? When I joined back, I literally joined back as a nobody. You know, I took a contract role. I took a temporary role, right? And a very output-based assignment, if you like, because the first 6 months for me felt like I needed to figure this out. I didn't know, you know, there is no great parenting manual that works for you on one, right? Like as you discovered after being a new parent, and all of us did. So I realized that I needed to work this out, right? I had to create a support structure. I had to do all of that. And then once I got comfortable with actually doing, you know, most of the working hours, I retained the flexibility to get back home whenever the child needed me and so on and so forth. But one thing to be hugely grateful for, what worked for me, is I had an absolutely brilliant help infrastructure. You know, the person who helped us through our, you know, through all of these years, she was probably stepped into my shoes and manage the child whenever it was needed. I had a couple of friends who were really very helpful, very encouraging, and always motivating me to not quit. So I think after that, you know, slowly the job responsibilities increased, my hours increased, travel kicked in, travel increased, and we just kept coping as it went along. Yeah.
Wow. And Rama, you know, this is really inspiring to see how far you have come and how successful your career has been even after that break, right? And it's so real, and thanks for being so candid about sharing how essentially you quite literally had to take a step back in your career after the break. You know, for some of the moms who, or even parents who are listening to this, who are actually in the midst of considering, do I take a career break? What kind of advice would you share with them on how to think about such a decision?
So there is no right or wrong thing, Chinnan, right? Mm. So I won't say don't take a break. You should never take a break, because every family's circumstances are different. How you feel and handle your emotions is very different as well as a unit. Who your partner is and how do they make you feel in the process is also a very critical factor, right? So there is no cookie cutter formula for any family. What I do say to women in particular is the decision to walk away should not be an emotional decision.
Mm.
Because don't act in haste and repent in leisure, right? So don't quit until you have to. Have the ability to go and negotiate whether you may want to drop back a level or so, but also, therefore, give yourself a chance on continuity. The one thing I realized is when you take a break, your skills don't stay refreshed, okay? And that deprives you of confidence when you actually want to come back.
Mm.
And then it becomes a vicious loop, right? Therefore, kind of being in the stream of the professional conversations is reasonably important. Trying to, you know, negotiate to see whether you can hang back a little. You don't need to be competitive at every stage, right? Because life is a marathon. It's definitely not a 50-meter sprint. So if you can tell yourself, it's okay, you know, it's a couple of years and I'll figure this, because you are trying to learn to do something completely new. Mothering is not a skill that you are born with. Sorry, but you know, that's not true, right? So you're trying to figure that. So unless you are this amazing super person who can learn new things at work, deliver outstandingly, learn how to mother, have zero guilt, can ace the game in corporate life, unless you can do all of that, it's okay to slow pedal for a while, right? Mm. But it's not okay to take this, you know, spot decision of saying, I'm done, I'm great, right? And that's what I would say, because your parents raise you as equals. So the one thing that you owe yourself and perhaps everyone else who input into you is to be an equal on this planet.
Wow, Rama, that is really refreshing. I really like the insight that, number one, don't act in haste, and number two, in between going all out in your career and taking a break, there is quite a broad spectrum in between that we should consider exploring, right? And I think, like you said, it's worth exploring all the different options before leaping on making anything out of haste. So yeah, that's so fascinating. Now, Rama, you also mentioned a part earlier a bit on having the right support and perhaps even having the right conversations with your partner. What did those look like for you?
So I think there were two sets of conversations that were, to me, very material in my life. Okay. Of course, one set of those conversations was with my partner, right? Because I think what my spouse realized is through my break, through my reset and career growth, what he's very clear about is what matters to me my sense of individuality, that it matters. And when you grow, when your spouse grows in every which sense, the family as a unit actually, not just financially, right? So that is almost a collateral outcome, right? But just materially, intellectually, conversationally, in thinking, you grow as a unit together, right? So he's been a very, very supportive spouse for 32 years. So I'm super blessed on that side, right? I think what made me step back and think about friendly was, quite frankly, my aunt-in-law, who's a very feisty old lady now, not then, but when I took a break, she actually said to me, balance of power positions is not just about nation states and economic and trade flows. She actually said this, and she said, balance of power position is contributing equally to the house, whether that means financially, whether that means parenting, or it means intellectually to an argument. So even if you're married to the best man on the planet, my nephew may well be that, but is this really what you want to be? If I were you, I would just get off and go get myself a job. I just felt that I have never forgotten that conversation, and I felt like it kicked me out of slumber.
Got it. Thanks for that. And you mentioned about contributing equally as a parent. Can you maybe share one or two stories on how that took shape? Would love to hear that as inspiration for some of our audience.
So I think two things, right? As you raise a child, one is being around, and then one is putting, okay, into their growth, into their thinking. So in the being around kind of framework, both of us had traveling jobs. One of the things we would always do is align our calendars. And I do remember in 18 years of our working, there were probably two nights where both of us were not there in town. And we really tried to kill ourselves. It used to really kill us, you know, but we used to try and manage the calendars such that one of us would always be there, you know, with the child. So that's one. The second thing is raising a child, right? In that, resonating the same messages to a growing child, just in terms of whether it's values, principles, or it is taking teaching responsibilities, and whoever is better at whatever, you know, you kind of impart that part of the training. All of that is also a very shared responsibility, right? So looking back, I feel like most of how we partnered together could fit into these two buckets.
Yeah, that's such a nice way to think about it. Maybe on the part about being there, right? I think Well, that's almost like a goal for me. 18 years, out of the 18 years, only two nights, you know, both parents weren't around. That clearly takes a lot of intentionality and a lot of effort. So Rama, especially at, I would say, the earlier stages, right, which it perhaps quite a fair bit of our audience might be at in their career, how do you even have those conversations? Because sometimes it can be tough, right? When perhaps you are not yet established in the company because of seniority or even just joining a new job. Having those conversations can be such a challenge, just to work around things like travel schedule. What kind of advice and what worked for you?
I don't want you to take away this message or the listeners that it was easy. It was not easy. Yep. It was very stressful. Because sometimes we would say, hey, I need to be out Wednesday next week. He said, well, how come you didn't tell me that? Because I have fixed this meeting. I'm supposed to be in Australia. And I'm saying, no, I'm supposed to be in China. And the China meeting is more important, right? So did these conversations happen? So many dozens of times. But the point really is, you got to be able to, you know, not always with a good outcome for each of us in the workplace, but I think we played for the long run, Janan. If you are a productive individual and you deliver to the company and you're not a slacker, then most companies do forgive some of this and they do understand that, right? So I think it's just about who you are and how you retain that respect and give yourself the leverage to have some of those conversations internally. Sometimes it was not easy. Sometimes it was really not easy. Even between us, it was not easy. But you got to work it out.
Agreed. And I think that open conversation and even daring to speak on these matters, right? I think sometimes it can be uncomfortable, but like you mentioned, it's so important, not just at the workplace, but even back at home. So this is really fascinating, Rama, that we spoke about the first chapter of your daughter's growth. Let's maybe move on to chapter two, when she was a teenager. And like you said, she appreciated the fact that, I guess, both her parents weren't around as much. So she had the opportunity to grow and express her freedom. What was parenting like in that second phase? Maybe let's start with some of the challenges that you faced during that second season.
Wow. I have never felt more inadequate than in those years. Because every child is different, but it is also a phase when children express and experiment with their individuality. And it's a learning phase for you as parents, because you spend time teaching them, training them, telling them, you know, controlling them, advising them. You know, these are the verbs, right? And then you step into a phase where you're listening to them, trying to understand them, you know, trying to guess where they're coming, reading silences, trying not to show your mad fury when you get banged. You know, so it's a phase when you're dealing with immaturity and learning that you are not mature enough. Okay, so it's a very enlightening phase for us as parents as well. So, well, I think those years, I would, you know, talk to a couple of friends who had probably been through it and ask them, hey, is this normal? You know, am I doing something wrong? Should I be looking at it differently? But in the end, it all works out. It all works out. But it's a tumultuous period. Invariably, that period coincides with a high growth phase in your career. And and so you're kind of dealing with, you're walking on knife at both sides, right? Like so.
Wow. And it seems like it's almost as the season changes, it's you have to respond to it. And I think the nature of parenting, sometimes it's not so clear, right? It's not like perhaps at a workplace, you got a promotion, you got a new responsibility, a project. Okay, you now know it's time to step up. Whereas what happens back at home, it's a lot more subtle. And sometimes you don't notice it until it already happens, right? So Rama, you're saying that there's this network, this community of friends that of course you reached out and you engaged with them. How was that like, right? I mean, with all the busyness at home, at work, how do you maintain your close group of friends?
They're keeping it small. The list is small because, you know, by definition, you can't do too much, right? Between travel and raising a child and a career, but also importantly, one of the things that I talk about is if you really want to grow as a woman leader, in particular, any leader, but a woman leader, you cannot drop your game in professional reading and keeping up with what is happening and all of that. That takes a lot of time, right? It's a commitment. It's not, you don't just turn up for work, right? So between all of that, I think when in the beginning phases of my career, it was probably easy to have a ton of friends. And as your child grows older and your own responsibilities increase, we all go through a phase where it is more patchy. But you see, you may have invested a well in a few of them. And then you know that you will ride those years, and then when you get out of it, they're still there. And that's really how you work it out.
So true. Like, some of the best friendships, I feel, are those that, you know, you don't meet up maybe for a while because both parties are busy, but when you do, it feels like nothing has changed since the last time you have.
Yeah.
Rama, you mentioned a bit about growth, right? And that constant need for growth. And like you also shared, it's not just for women or for mums, it's for everyone. Finding that space, creating the intentionality behind growing, reading beyond the job. So how do you find the time and the space to do that in the busyness of your career?
So firstly, I love the space that I work in. You really have to be passionate about what you do. Otherwise, it can be very tedious, right? To read, you know, so a doctor probably needs to keep up with the latest in medical. But if you're a most recalcitrant, unwilling doctor, it's not very likely that he knows the latest or she knows the latest, right? It's the same thing in any piece of work. If you love what you do, then you want to know more. Knowledge becomes like a thirst, right? So you just keep going at it. And so for me, I don't carve out time. I am fortunate that I actually have to do a lot of reading to do a lot of my work. So it gets done. And then the thing is, they fund reading though, right? Unfortunately, like you, you're not going to put this in a podcast. You're not going to put this on a print file, right? That is yep. really what has changed. So now books are consumed through audio as opposed to, you know, sitting down and reading. But give me an old-fashioned book on an armchair any day, you know. One day when I'm like not working like this, I'll probably go back to doing exactly what I used to do many years back. I love reading. So it again needs to be a passion.
Yeah, I totally echo you on that one. And even though there's, like you say, ebooks, audiobooks, to be honest, I still love the good old paper book. It puts less strain on my eyes and it's just different, right? To be able to hold it in your hands and flip those pages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. You know, the cliche of find a job that you love, it's been overused terribly, but I think in all cliches, there always is a grain of truth. And I think we see that very clearly on how that plays out, such that even the growth aspects are things that you don't even feel like you need to set aside time for. It's just so integrated and so ingrained. So that's really inspiring and that's encouraging to hear. Now, moving on to, I would say, the most recent phase you are as a parent, right? When I guess your daughter is now in college. Maybe let's dial a bit back. What was the journey like guiding her to choose her major and where to study?
You are coming from a huge presumption, my friend, which is that every child is waiting to be told and advised what to choose. You know, at least your generation should recognize that the one thing I have learned in working with younger and younger people, and I do work with a lot of young people, both on my team, we have the honor of recruiting many young talent into the business, but also, you know, in talking to my daughter and her friends, the wider community, children are very informed. They actually are very clear about what they would not like to do. They may not be very clear about what they would like to do, but they're very clear about what they would not like to do. And I think that in itself is a great start, right? If somebody has decided not studying, they don't want to study art history, it's a great start, right? Like then you know that you're not going in a certain direction. Our conversations has always been about pick something that you can see through, right? So be very clear about what does not inspire you at all. And then we can talk on the shortlist. And so by hit and trial, we kind of came to that. The one advice that I do remember giving her when she was younger, and even now we talk about I am a huge believer in linguistic skills because there is scientifically also it is shown to enhance brain functioning quite a bit. So I used to encourage her to learn languages. And I still talk to her about learning and operating in multiple languages. Because as you grow older, it's also the people connect. We can do machine learning and artificial intelligence and robotics and everything. But at the end of the day, you know, we don't want to become machines, right? So I think the one thing that parents need to do more of is even while you're guiding your child to pick up technology or cyber engineering or any of those good fields, very important not to lose certain basic skills of communicating, connecting, empathy, linguistics. You know, these are very important skills as well.
I couldn't agree more. I think for me, that realization was learning how important it is to communicate, to persuade, and even to sell, right? I think sometimes sales has such a, almost like a negative connotation to it. And it feels like the hard skills, the technical skills should take superiority over it. But like you said, it's about having both, right? And focusing on things like the communication, the empathy. It's something that I think broadly in the world, we could definitely have more of, and we would definitely be in a better place of it. So Rama, it's interesting, right? You are spot on that, you know, I would say kids these days, they learn so much by their own. So fun question, who learned about crypto first? You or your daughter?
I did.
Oh, okay. Tell us more.
Because in my line of work, it was just a natural subject to learn about. And like I said, I do have younger talent on the team. And they're so excited about their crypto and trading and all of that. I got a bunch of them together and I said, just talk to me. Talk to me about what you do and what you think you know. And then, you know, read up about it, thought about it, developed a point of view on it. And then it came to a point where I felt like I don't believe I know everything. I understand how to think about it and how you should probably frame it in your own head. So now I talk to my daughter about crypto.
What was one of the most recent conversation topics that you can remember that you had with her on crypto?
This debate on whether DeFi is good, DeFi is bad. A debate on whether crypto coins will overtake the world and will become the new way to go. And all investments need to happen in crypto. I said, you know, all of this is super excitement happening amongst people who really don't understand the real world implications of much of this, right? What I was trying to explain to her was the difference between looking at crypto as a coin and confusing everything else and trying to explain the difference between blockchain as a technology and crypto as a currency, and then even within crypto, a central bank digital currency and a stable coin and a more volatile coin where demand sets well price, right? So that was one of the conversations we had.
And I'm sure that was such an enlightening one, because it's not just a topic that you have developed the interest in. It's something that at work, you and your team are actively building, right? So congratulations on recently announcing the collaboration to launch the crypto-funded cards. I think that's a huge step and certainly a very exciting time for you and your team.
Thank you.
So Rama, I also noticed you are very active mentoring women in tech, right? So maybe can you tell us, did you have a mentor that played a huge role in your life, or perhaps in a season in your life that inspired you to be a mentor as you are today?
Yeah, that's true. Although in those days, nobody was called a mentor. There was no formal mentorship program or anything. In hindsight, you realize they were mentors. Okay, so we didn't have a structured cadence conversation where I used to turn up every fortnight with what I had done and what questions I had. None of that. But I had the very good fortune in my first stint in technology to work with a gentleman who was very, very, very senior, but also very, very big in his thinking, very principled approach to work. And in observing and working with him closely in my 20s, I realized that when some people, when they grow so big, there is a certain sense of dignity and charisma and quiet that they have, that when even when they speak really softly, the whole room listens. So such people, you just need to observe and learn. So 30 years later, he's still my mentor. I would still talk to him. So I think he left, although I worked with him just for a couple of years, I think he left very deep impressions on me, and almost in terms of setting the bar on who you should be.
Wow, that's powerful. And what were one or two characteristics of the interactions that both of you had that made it such a special and fruitful kind of relationship?
So Chinin, I don't know if this is generational, right? I think the good part is every successive generation has become more questioning. Some of the challenge is also in the same phenomenon. I think when I probably did my stint with him, there was a presumption that they knew more. That when they were giving you an assignment or teaching you or training you, that it was your position to learn, right? Ask questions, but with a learning attitude, not with a challenging attitude. So that, I think, was one of the things that has stayed with me. And the second thing really was that these people didn't need to invest time in training somebody who was so many levels below them. But clearly, it came from a very good place of wanting to see a young person come up and really do well. I think those are a couple of things that have stayed. And therefore, when I meet good people with the right headsets and the right caliber, I am almost by default motivated to try and get them to a better place, either through conversations or through opening opportunities or whatever, right?
Wow. And I've noticed that's something that comes out so strongly in you, right? That desire to, may I dare say, pay it forward, right? Because you have grown so much and you are still growing from the mentors and the investment people have made into you. But yet you're so actively also pouring and investing into others. I think that is truly really, really commendable and inspirational. So, Rama, I'm sure you have an incredibly busy schedule, right? So how do you think about managing your calendar, your schedule, so that it works for you as a mentor, as a mom, and of course, as a leader at work?
So when my daughter was younger, you know, school meetings, parent-teacher conversations, these were all very critical milestones in our lives, right? Now you wonder why it was even important, but it was. And so one of the things that I was maniacal about doing was actually looking at the school calendar and making sure I actually blocked those just so I could work around it. And if I wasn't in town and I couldn't make it, then it had to be blocked also on my husband's calendar so that at least one of us could make it, right? That was the low technology version of this. I think now it's much more about multitasking. And I think what has made it amazingly convenient is two things. One, you kind of conduct most of your personal, you know, buying expeditions online, right? Like, so the apps have made it so convenient to live. The second thing is for me, the notes. So I, on my Apple phone, whenever I have a thought, I would just put it down. So it's always there for reference. And I realize between my calendar, my notes, and my apps, I'm sorted. I'm in control. I can do most things. So I generally feel like the digital apps on, and the mobile phone have become very liberating for those who are trying to cope with a ton of things to do.
So to sum up today's conversation, Rama, if there's one lesson you have learned as a parent in tech, what would that be?
Never to force your child to do what you think you're passionate about. So I hear a lot of conversations from people saying early education for technology, put the girls in early and all of that. All of that is correct. Exposing them to possibilities, exposing children to all possibilities is always a good thing to do. Insisting that they follow the path that you believe might be the right one is perhaps not the best advice, right? So That's the one thing that I would say. And the third thing really is, when your child is ready, if they're naturally a technology-oriented kid, that's fine. But if they're not, and there is a time when they get ready to have that conversation, as a parent, you owe it to them to explain in very simple terms what you understand about the world of technology so that you can ignite that passion.
That's beautiful. To let each child explore his or her own path and to be the enabler for that instead of imposing our views. Wow, Rama, thank you so much for this advice and this conversation. I find it so richly packed with so many tips and just real stories, right? So behind all the successes that you have achieved, it's so refreshing to hear the challenges you have went through but also have overcome. And we really appreciate you doing that. Maybe as a final question, if let's say our listeners are keen to connect with you, how can they best do so?
So my LinkedIn, I do check. I'm not super regular, as Jin and you know, but I do check. That's probably the right place. And I think it reaches me on my mailbox. I'm just a bit lagged between, you know, work and...
Of course, work and family, yes.
Yeah, I do respond and happy to do conversations. If people want to talk as well.
Well, Rama, it's been a pleasure to have you on Parents in Tech. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure and all the very best.
Thanks for listening to the Parents in Tech podcast with me, your host, Tsingen. We hope you were inspired on how to raise kids and build companies. To catch up on earlier episodes or stay updated with upcoming ones, head over to www.parents.fm to join our community of parents in tech. There, you can also drop me a question, idea, feedback, or suggestion. Once again, the website is www.parents.fm. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.